Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by AOL Radio at AOL.com/podcasting. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 184 for March 2nd, 2009. Hard times for hard copy. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Squarespace.com, the fast and easy way to publish a high-quality website or blog. For a free trial and 10% off your new account, go to squarespace.com/twit. And by audible.com. Sign up for the Platinum Plan and get 2 free books. Go to audible.com/twit2. And by GoToMeeting. For your free 30-day trial, visit gotomeeting.com/twit. And by listeners like you. Thanks so much for your contribution. We couldn't do TWiT without it. This is TWiT This Week in Tech. We are going to cover a lot of ground today, so I'm going to get going very quickly introducing our panelists and a great panel assembled today for the show, starting with my friend Alex Lindsay, who's in studio with us from the Pixel Core.
Hello.
Good to see you once again, Alex.
It's good to be here.
Right after the show today, we're going to have a live concert. Alex is bringing Peter Himmelman in to perform for us. That's going to be fun.
Yeah, I was excited. You were on the show. I guess you were on his show.
Yeah, he does a show on Ustream called Furious World.
Yeah, and I mentioned that I really enjoyed his music, and next thing I know, he's coming up.
He's doing a concert in your backyard.
Yeah, he's coming. I think it's raining here, so I think he's going to do it in my living room.
See, that's something Bono never did for me. You know, I told him many times how much I liked his work, but nothing.
Exactly.
Nothing at all.
Yeah, so we're going to be streaming live from my living room later this evening.
Awesome.
So it should be fun.
Also with us from channeldvorak.com, it's John C. Dvorak, the world's most prolific computer columnist. Hey, John.
Hey, there I am.
There he is in your clown wig. He wears that.
I'm supposed to have that big finger or something that goes back and forth. You sit in the front
number
row
one.
At a baseball
we're
game.
Number one.
Whatever happened to that guy?
Also with us from the Houston Chronicle, and I think a good time to have him on because he is a Hearst employee, Dwight Silverman.
Yes, and I'd like to keep it that way, Leo. So,
well, we shall see. I mean, I don't know if you're going to have the option. We're going to talk about it. This is the week that newspapers kind of started the beginning of the end, I think, in some ways.
Also, oh, I don't. I hope not. Boy.
Well, good. Well, this is good. This will be a good topic. I hope not, too. I love my newspaper. Denise Howell is on vacation. I'm so jealous. She's at Indian Wells enjoying the fine weather, but she's consented to join us in her bikini, and it'll be a first. I think we've never had a TWiT panelist in a bathing
suit.
Yeah,
and I think I'm the only one not on video, and that's no accident.
Well, we tried. You can't say we didn't try. Hi, Denise. Denise is the host of course, This Week in Law, and she does the Blogarithms column, and what is it? Blog and Baggage, which I love.
Bag and Baggage,
which I love. And has a new page, imetdenise.com.
Yep.
It's your channel, Dvorak.
my lame attempt, yes.
So we're all here to talk about the end of times, actually. This was the week that the Rocky Mountain News halted publication. In fact, really upsetting, I think, a lot of the employees there. They said, well, you didn't even try to fire us first. You didn't even... you know, try to cut down. And the guy in charge said, well, you know, we could have cut the newsroom in half and it still wouldn't have saved us. Even if we had a 40% increase in online revenues for the next 5 years, it still wouldn't have saved us. We're essentially out of luck. The San Francisco Chronicle also announced $50 million a year losses. And they said, the Hearst Corporation, their owner, said we've got to do some severe cutting. Or we're going to have to sell the operation. Something similar to what they've said in Seattle on the Post Intelligencer. They said we're either going to find a buyer or we're going to shutter the doors.
Well, the question is who would buy a standard newspaper in these days?
Well, that's
Paul
American.
Allen.
Yeah,
right.
He'll buy it for the tax deduction. You know, but you have but a Paul dog in this not. Hunt, Dwight Silverman, because you work for the Hearst Corporation.
Yes, and the Chronicle, the Houston Chronicle. Is not quite in the the shape that the San Francisco Chronicle is, we're looking at some layoffs sometime in the next probably 45, 30 days. And we already had some at the end of last year. You know, newspapers essentially are trying to get their staffs and their operations down to meet their revenues, which are declining. The print revenues are dropping because of the economy and other factors, and the web revenues aren't going up fast enough to meet them, although growth is pretty good on the web. So it's a real sticky situation and a tough time to be in the business.
What's killing the newspapers?
I think it's a variety of things. I think kind of that economic seesaw that I mentioned with the cost of video, I mean the cost of the web versus print ads that just doesn't make up for it. Print ads are a rarity. They are, you know, they're few and far between because of space, but on the web they're a commodity, and so you just can't charge as much for them. So far, what we've been trying to do is generate as many page views as you can to put ads on them. But the value that causes the value of the ads, you know, to go further down. And of course, in an intense economic recession, I like to call it an economic tesseract.
Which is, by the way, for those of you who don't know, a fourth dimensional cube.
That's right. And it's the reference actually that I like is from Madeline L'Engle's
A Wrinkle in Time.
A Wrinkle in Time. Yeah, yeah. Because it kind of feels like we're going back in time through this fourth dimensional cube. So I think it's economically speaking.
Is it no coincidence, or is it a coincidence that the Kindle 2 came out this week? John, do you think that that's part of what's going on?
Nah. The fact of the matter is the newspapers have been in a slide since the advent of TV news. It's been a slow decline, and it was accelerated only recently, but they were sliding years ago before the web. And then now what the web has done is it pointed out there's a couple of things in my opinion that are a problem. One, I think the newspapers aren't providing a quality product to their readers. And in fact, I'm looking at the Rocky Mountain News site right now, and they have their covers all online. And I'm looking at these covers, and they suck. I don't see any reason I'd buy this newspaper if it was on a newsstand. Only one of these covers are interesting, but the rest of them are just like boring.
It was a tabloid paper, right? It was there are two papers in Denver. So, I mean, I don't think there's any markets except New York City where you could support more than one newspaper. Can you?
I think they would all. It's all always possible, but not when these papers are so dull that nobody cares. But anyway, let me bring up a couple of interesting factors besides the fact that the papers are a crappy product, and of course then they cheapen them as they have to do cutbacks. They don't put more money into them, they take money out of them, which makes it worse. But it seems to me that what's always been overlooked, and what I think the web managed to point out to everybody, is the redundancy of news. I mean, if you're a newspaper and all you do is run AP stories and stuff that you've syndicated from the New York Times or even your own syndicate, and everybody in their sister that's in the syndicate runs the same stories, and if you go on the internet and you see nothing but redundancy, you say, why do we need all these newspapers for? I think there's just too many. There really only needs to be a few national newspapers and some local newspapers, and these kind of quasi-national papers, which would include the Houston Chronicle, which are really only sell into a small and moderate sized area. I think they're all toast.
The Chronicle has 330,000 subscribers, the 12th largest newspaper in the country. Is it gone?
The Chronicle?
San Francisco.
It's toast.
It's toast. Which means San Francisco will not have a daily paper.
Well, they got a couple of these free ones.
The Examiner still.
The free ones. Great.
Well, the one thing that's happening in San Francisco is that the Hearst has told the unions that it wants serious concessions and is talking about some serious cuts in terms of staffing, and they have to get to a certain amount before they can achieve it. They have said they will close it if they can't get to that, but it's also interesting to look at what's happening in Seattle, where it looks like they're going to go with an online-only version. And I am not in the loop in terms of Hearst Corporate. I don't know anything more than kind of what you read in the newspapers. That's ironic,
or on a blog,
Yeah. But I'm I'm really intrigued by what's happening in Seattle. I was kind of hoping like that would happen a long time ago. I think Seattle has an opportunity to be a real test bed for an online only newspaper where the brand is primarily promoted by a website as opposed to print. And I wish that Hearst would do that in San Francisco, but I don't know that the economics are there in that paper.
Denise, you're in beautiful Indian Wells with your husband. You're enjoying a beautiful Sunday. Did you sit down to brunch with the Sunday Times and take hours leisurely reading it?
No, not brunch, but we do get the paper every day.
I love my Sunday paper.
Yeah, and you know, we'll go out and get it if it's not delivered to the house. That's mostly driven by my husband. I'm a paper reader because it's here.
We subscribe to the local small town paper, the Argus Courier, which comes out on a Wednesday. It's owned by Times Corporation. We subscribe to the Sunday Times, and we subscribe to the San Francisco Chronicle. And on my Kindle, I subscribe to all the same stuff, including plus the New Yorker, the Atlantic, and the Salon.
Now, do you like reading it on the Kindle? As opposed to reading the paper.
And you know what? Don't. This is where it's galling me. I love the Kindle. I'm very happy with the Kindle for reading books. But it is not a satisfying experience for reading a newspaper. And
Why is that?
It's, you know, there's something about browsing a paper that is a very different aesthetic experience from reading sequentially page after page on a book. A paper is meant to browse. I think images are important. I think the scanning is important. And the physical tactical side of it. So, you know, Denise, you're not one of those people who feels, I thought that maybe you were a Sunday paper kind of person.
I am a Sunday paper kind of person, but only because somebody else is going to the effort of putting it in front of me. Yeah. I mean, and we subscribe to the paper at home. I'm looking forward actually to getting the new Kindle because one of the papers that's going to be on there is the San Francisco Chronicle. And I just, like you said, I don't regularly go and check out sfgate.com.
No,
I used to live in the Bay Area, and I do miss that paper. Just it has a unique flavor all its own. And I'm looking forward to getting it on the Kindle, so I'm kind of hoping that it's a better experience than reading it on the web.
One of the things about the Kindle and newspapers is that what you're getting is part of the morning edition. In other words, not everything.
It isn't the whole thing, is it? No.
Right. And it's only delivered once. You know, what kind of irritates me about newspapers on the Kindle is that they don't update the news during the day. I think it would be really cool to have a device that you could carry around with you where, just like on the web, you got breaking news. You got things that were happening, during the day. I think that's an opportunity lost on the Kindle.
I have a device like that.
What's that?
It's called my iPhone.
iPhone.
Yeah.
iPhone is an amazing device for getting breaking news. I've been kind of running around our newsroom and talking to our managers and yelling that we should be doing a lot more on the iPhone.
It's not just the iPhone that you can get breaking news on.
Well, no, but I'm talking about just smartphones. I think mobile devices.
Yeah, because it's mobile. I think that makes sense, yeah.
I tweeted last night that I won an iFindle.
An iFindle. Well, now, one of the stories that did circulate when the Kindle 2 came out was that maybe Amazon would be releasing this format and making, for instance, an iPhone application possible. I don't think the form factor of the iPhone is really as easy to read. It might be ironic. You might be right, Dwight, that the iPhone is better for reading a newspaper and the Kindle's better for reading a book.
For breaking news. Yeah.
Well, and I find that I got into the habit of doing it going through the New York Times on my iPhone when I was in San Francisco, and I
Times
took the cable
has a car. Very nice client for
yeah, and iPhone. I didn't use the client. I actually used their webpage.
Really,
and I took the cable car to work, and so it was really a pain in the neck to open a newspaper because it would blow and it'd be hard to keep track of it while I was reading it. And once I got used to it, I got to a point where that's actually what broke me away from ever going back to the paper. Was I got used to having this little box that had all my text in it, and I it was much easier to eat your breakfast and read the New York Times on my iPhone than it was using a newspaper.
Well, there's also some. I'm sorry, but there's also some sort of a green irony here. The newspapers have largely promoted the idea of conservation and going green and all the rest of it. And when you look at surveys about why people stop subscribing to newspapers, a lot of it has to do with the fact that they don't like to waste all that paper.
I admit it. I feel really guilty. And we recycle
New York Times, 70,000 trees a week.
Oh, my God. I mean, I feel guilty when I see that big stack of paper. And the truth is, the other reason you feel guilty is you only read a fraction
right.
of what that paper represents. So it really
right.
is
a
waste.
And the Sunday paper, I mean, for all the good stuff that comes from sitting down with the Sunday paper, all the advertising that you have to throw away when you have that paper is just disgusting.
Yeah. Well, that's how they were making their living. I'm going to submit that there's really three things that killed the daily paper. Ink, paper, and Craig Newmark. I mean, right. if you don't have Craigslist, Dwight, am I wrong on the economics of newspapers? But wasn't the classified ad what kept newspapers alive? And without that, can they survive?
There's a real interesting illustration of that. You're right. In the 70s, when the kind of Rust Belt was falling apart, people were moving to the South, the Houston Chronicle and the Houston Post's classified sections were incredibly fat and happy, and people used to sell them on the streets of Detroit and other Rust Belt cities, just the classified sections, because they had the ads for Houston in them. And we had a huge influx of people coming down in that era into Houston from Michigan and the Rust Belt. But what ultimately has happened is yes, that the internet, I wouldn't say just Craigslist. I think Craigslist had a real impact in San Francisco, less so in other parts of the country. But the internet in general and ways of being able to distribute goods, including eBay, I think wound up cutting into classifieds terribly. And it's now very thin. I mean, you look at the classified section in our paper now versus what it was in its heyday in the 70s, and it's just astonishing.
What about
they were putting too many eggs in that classified basket? Let's face it.
Yeah.
Oh yes, I agree.
What about really the bigger issue, which is news gathering? You know, they're all saying we can't afford the big newsroom, but you know, you look at Drudge, you even look at the Huffington Post, and mostly what they do these days is aggregate mainstream media. They're not doing much journalism on their own. If you get rid of the newsrooms, if you get rid of the investigative reporters, don't we as a democracy suffer as well? And when I say we, the U.S., but worldwide, doesn't the world suffer without a free press?
I think it's already suffered.
Go ahead.
Look, people have already talked about all the foreign correspondents are all gone. They've been gone for decades.
That's true.
They've pulled them, and they don't have resources for these investigative reports. We're living in a dream world if we think this stuff even exists anymore. Now it's just redoing, you know, Associated Press stories, Reuters, whatever else you
have.
That's
a good point. They're just taking the feeds. So is it Reuters that's got the big newsroom?
Reuters does have a big newsroom.
Maybe that's the solution. Denise, what were you going to say there?
I was going to say, you know, I think of it as kind of parallel to the music industry. The impulse to do journalism certainly hasn't gone away.
Yeah.
Yeah, just like the impulse to be a creative musician. But the business models are all in flux, and the old ones are falling apart, and the new ones are being figured out. And what I was going to say about the Huffington Post, for example, that's interesting is, you know, they do give a forum for some unique individual voices that you wouldn't see in mainstream media.
True.
You know, you have Esther Dyson reporting in from Space Camp in Russia. And,
right.
Just random things that I think are fascinating examples of citizen journalism or, you know, individualized journalism that are trying to find their way into this new business model.
And I think that I completely agree. I think that the issue is that I think you are going to end up with less of a professional class of journalists that are more syndicated, you know, so that there's less writers writing about the, you know, it's the same thing right now.
Where do Woodward and Bernstein come from these in the future? Who's going to pay for that?
Well, I think that you're still going to have national brands of people who are writing that are going to end up exposed to a lot of markets because the markets will be, I think that having a local reporter reporting on national or international news will become less and less common because you just don't have the money to do that. But I also think that you're going to continue to have this exploding, you know, blogosphere where people are able to put stuff up that isn't necessarily as refined, but you know, this is the same thing we hear every time there's a revolution. Like everything turns over.
It's disruptive.
When I was working at a cable network, learning how to do pre-press, you know, learning how to do computer. And I've said this before that the art directors were lamenting these interns that were getting paid $4.50 an hour and taking away their work. You know, and that the art direction was going to go, you know, to hell in a handbasket because of all of this. And, you know, it was bad for a couple of years as people figured all of that out. But then something else came up and replaced it. And I think that we're going to see that happen again. I don't know exactly how long it'll take, but that it's exactly the same thing.
I wanted to take exception to something John said about local investigative reporting. I think that's still being done in a lot of markets. Last week, we had a federal judge plead guilty to charges of sexual harassment of his staff as a result of stories that we had done in our paper. And that stories like that are being done in major cities and newspapers all the time. The Rocky Mountain News was known for that kind of thing. So I think that that type of journalism is still going on. I think.
Well, who's going to do it in Denver?
Well, in Denver, you know, there's the Denver Post.
I don't know
what their reputation is. Right. But that's more than zero.
Yeah. One more than zero. It's close to zero.
It's close to zero. And I think that, you know, one of the things that we're doing at the Chronicle is we are trying to provide a platform for the community to cover itself. We allow people to set up blogs, and we have recruited people to write about kind of their niches. That's not investigative reporting, but I think that the future of newspapers is to kind of find a way to let the community tell its story. Our traditional past mission has been to go out, get information, compile it, make it understandable, and then present it to people. And I think now what we have to do is kind of go onto the web, go to where people are talking and writing about themselves and doing video about themselves, organize that, compile it, and make it understandable to the community, help the community cover itself. That's the way I think that we can, in the long term, go in and provide the coverage that people want in a city from a newspaper.
So, Dwight, what are you going to do after the Houston Chronicle folds?
Are you going to write a blog?
I don't think that the Houston Chronicle is going to fold. We're in relatively good shape compared to the rest of the country. But, yeah, I mean, if tomorrow I had no newspaper, I own DwightSilverman.com, and I have a few other catchy little domains that I'm thinking about, and I would throw up a blog and just go after it. You know,
I think now's the time, Dwight. I mean, would the Chronicle let you do that? Would it let you pursue that?
Not independently, and having the Chronicle's brand behind me is pretty powerful.
Yeah.
You know, I make a phone call, I get it returned. That's kind of the best.
I just use as a model what I did, because I've been through media set downsizing, and at every stage, I think it's really great if you could transfer the brand to the new media before the old media disappears. It's a very, just from my own experience, it's a very useful useful thing to do. You know?
Well, probably one of the best examples of that recently is Harry McCracken.
Yeah,
his Technologizer.
Yeah.
He started that from scratch. And
he was still at PC World when he did, too, wasn't he? Or no?
No, he had already left.
He left. Okay.
He kind of disappeared for a little while, and then he came forth with, I talked to him about it at CES, and I think he's making a go of it. What's funny is, the same day that he quit from PC World, he closed on a new house.
Oh, yay. That's brave.
So that's a leap of faith.
That's brave.
And so, you know, I think it shows that you can still do it.
I want to take a break. You know, one of the things that's happened is that Hearst has announced its own Kindle. I want to talk about the prospects for that. Also about Kindle 2. I've got one here. I'll play you the voice. But before we do that, I want to mention a brand new sponsor on the show and really welcome them. I'm actually thrilled to have these guys on board. It's a company called Squarespace at squarespace.com. I know you know about them, Alex. It's kind of funny because Alex and I both looked at this independently, and I am blown away.
Yeah, it really is the next generation in a lot of ways of blogging.
It
does the hosting.
Fully hosted, so you're not doing the geek stuff of installing software. You're not... But, boy, you get a really great functionality. You get the ability to scale very well in case you get dug.
Right. And also you get you are able to – there's tons of widgets that are pre-built, and there's no code. It's not like, oh, I got to cut and paste some code over. It's literally
drop.
I open up my template. I drag stuff in. I want to make sure that this thing is orderable by Amazon. I can input my affiliate. I can add things to DigMe. I can add all that stuff, all the things you would normally want on a blog – are all just kind of built into it. I did some research because we almost went with it with Twip, and then Scott had his own
people. Scott
wanted
to do his own thing. Yeah.
But he had his own capacity.
You know, as somebody who has run now a bunch of my own WordPress blogs, we are moving the corporate blog over to it. I'm looking at moving Leoville over to it. There's a real advantage to not doing it yourself. They've got a server.
Okay, well, let me interject since we're plugging this guy.
Yeah.
One of the things I think people should know out there is it actually employs a kind of dynamic CSS.
It's very cool.
Which is very interesting to play with instead of having to dick around. And you can import your own code if you want to.
Oh, yeah.
It's not like it keeps you locked out, but it's got this dynamic CSS is quite fascinating. I've never seen anything work as well as this. It's a WYSIWYG design. It's quite unique. And, on the fly while you're live.
Oh yeah, you could. Let's say you decide I don't want that column to be so wide. You drag it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really, these guys are doing some very, it's a Yahoo interface builder. I asked a little bit about the underlying technology. They're doing some very interesting JVM stuff, some virtualizing in the servers so that they can throw more servers in place and it spreads it load balances across all the sites. There's huge value to using people who are using state-of-the-art technology as your back end. I mean, I like having my own back end. I like having the root login. But I got to tell you,
I've learned
my lesson. We found out today that we were offline for 8 hours. My blog was offline for 8 hours because somebody at the server had kicked an Ethernet cable loose. So Squarespace sounding better and better. Take a look at it. You can try it for 2 weeks and get 10% off if you decide to stick around to your new account at squarespace.com/twit. Squarespace.com/twit. And I'm going to tell you the most important thing to you, and certainly when you're doing the trial, it will automatically import WordPress Blogger movable type typepad and export it. And I was so impressed by this. It is not one of those Roach Motel sites where you get your data in, you can never get it out again. They have, from day one, had complete data portability in and out. If you're a photographer, this is why Twip should have used it. The photo gallery templates, unbelievable. Incredible templates. Widgets for Google Maps, built-in search engine optimization, website tracking, permissions. That's why we're going to use it because we're going to have multiple editors. The cloud architecture is just mind-blowing. Squarespace.com/twit. You're going to hear more about them on the Twitch shows. I've just become a really big fan of this. And if you're looking at a place to host your blog, to do a blog that looks gorgeous, easily, quickly, and affordably, squarespace.com/twit. And we thank him so much for becoming part of the Twit family. I talked for a long time to Anthony and Dane, who are the two of the guys behind it. And it's really cool. You know, they're young guys. It's really kind of neat what's going on out there. All right, let's talk about. I have a feeling I can almost guess John's reaction to the Hearst Corporation saying, "Well, we're going to do a Kindle ourselves." What do you think, John? They have a shot.
You already guessed my reaction. Why ask?
I just.
It's idiotic.
Okay, thank you. I'm right.
It's fun to hear you say it, John.
It just sounds better coming out of John's mouth.
Why not do their own? They're making it's going to be a larger format, right?
Why are they spending their time on this sort of thing? I mean, let's face it. If we go back to the argument that the content stinks in these newspapers and the things aren't compelling, and they're not doing a very good job, and they've cheapened the product, and this and that and the other thing, what is going to? That's not going to change whether you have a Kindle-like device or not. And I don't think the typical newspaper reader, especially the ones who are still subscribers, will really like what you say, Leo. And I'm in total agreement with this. When you have a newspaper, you browse it in a funny kind of way that is very unique to newspapers. This device is you might. As well just read the headlines on your iPhone. It's the same thing, only bigger.
They say that while it's going to be black and white, because you're really stuck with the e-ink, that black and white right now, they do want to go to high-resolution color. They want to do video. Now, remember, Hearst doesn't just own newspapers. They own a lot of magazines.
And also, the one thing to notice is this isn't a Johnny-come-lately kind of reaction. They invested in e-ink quite some time ago.
Oh, so this is their technology.
This is the technology that's being used is, over 10 years ago, they invested
in
e-ink.
That.
So they've been playing this game for quite some time.
But they're a little late to the game. I mean, Amazon's there. Sorry.
Well, I think that the thing that they're looking at also is that they are trying to be more flexible with the business model. You know, both Amazon.
They want to make an open device.
Right. So basically they're going to allow magazine companies and newspaper companies to define how people pay for it, how they, you know, and so on and so forth, rather than taking Amazon and what will sure to be an Apple reaction when Apple eventually does this. This is the way it gets done. This is the way it's distributed.
Right. Denise,
it's a loser. It's a money loser. It's going to be a big time. You might as well just buy a yacht and throw money into it.
Denise, do you have a Kindle? You have a Kindle, don't you?
I ordered mine last night.
Aha. Uh-huh. So this would be your first Kindle.
Yes.
And what puts you over the top?
Both Ernie Svensson, who is a frequent guest on Twill, and Robert Scoble gave the new version rave reviews. And when they both like something, I'm bound to like it.
I'm going to go out on a limb. I think this is to publishing what the iPod was to the music industry. I think it's actually the first one was not. The first one was the Pontiac Aztec of reading devices. This is elegant. It's slim. It solves a lot of the UI issues. Alex is eyeing it right now. Solves a lot of the UI issues that I had with the first Kindle. The page turn is faster. You don't accidentally press buttons.
The screen isn't. I can't.
16 grades. You can't touch it, and you do want to touch it, don't you, Alex?
Well, after you're trained by the iPhone,
let me turn it on for you
to touch it. You know, you're.
Want to hear the reading? Would you like to hear the reading a little
sure.
bit? All right, let me.
I'm curious about the reading because did you guys see Will Wheaton's comparison?
No, what did he say?
He, you know, there was that whole thing that came out last week about whether they were going to be permitted to do the
Authors
meeting.
Guild made a stink.
The moronic right. Authors Guild said, "You're going to kill our audiobooks."
Right, to which.
Amazon, not to mention the fact that, how are you going to kill the. You already bought the book.
Right. Well, so Amazon caved on the fair use issue, which isn't surprising since fair use is basically just an invitation to litigate the issue.
I have a theory on this whole thing, but let me play for you. I'm gonna John, you're gonna be muted for a minute. I'm gonna use your microphone to plug in Mr. Kindle. And now, ladies and gentlemen, a dramatic reading from Masters of Doom. The story. This is the story of the id guys, John Carmack and George Romero. How two guys, something, 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 dot, 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 ellipsis. By the way, this is very slow. I'm stalling.
Suspense. Dum, 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 dum. Romero mimicked these video game sounds the way other kids did celebrities.
That's the female voice.
This was worth risking everything. The crush of the meteors, the theft of the paper route money, the wrath of his stepfather. Because no matter what Romero suffered, he could always escape back into the games. At the moment. What he expected to suffer was a legendary whipping.
Now, I'm going to play the male voice, which I think is maybe marginally easier to understand. But this is a computer voice. There's no question.
Dum, 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 dum. Romero mimicked these video game sounds the way other kids get celebrities. Fun like this was worth risking everything. The crush of the meteors, the theft of the paper route money, the wrath of his stepfather.
So I guess...
The male voice has more inflection.
Yeah. It's still kind of, you know... A mechanistic inflection, but there's some inflection to it.
Yeah, so Will Wheaton did this interesting side-by-side test where his theory that he was positing, and I think it's where you're going by playing this for us from the Kindle, is that there's just no comparison between a mechanized voice and a human voice. And so he read from his book, Sunken Treasure, and then he had his Max text-to-speech generator, which he was told was sort of like the Kindle.
It's actually a little better, but it's roughly the same. Yeah,
the Alex voice he picked. And had that read. And, you know, I got what he was saying, that certainly it's better to have a person read. But the machine-read version wasn't bad. And, you know, in a pinch, I would definitely do it. And unfortunately, Amazon has sort of left us in that pinch because getting audiobooks onto the Kindle isn't all that easy, especially if you're on a Mac, right? Because you have to
use the Audible software, or I don't even know how you.
Right, I think on the Mac, I found an article. It was from a year ago, so maybe this has updated since then. But it was on Rec's blog, grousing loudly about the fact that if you have a Mac, you're out of luck because the Audible software that works with a Kindle is PC only.
Well, I got an iPod. I really don't care about putting audiobooks on the Kindle, but which will kill the battery life. In fact, reading kills the battery life. So I think this is more like I'm reading a book. I have to get in the car. I'm going to turn on the audio so I can continue to kind of read along.
Well, and I think Amazon's issue right now is they can't afford to lose trajectory. They need to like just be streamlined about launching this new application and not have a lot of hubbub. I think one passive aggressive way they could handle this is to Make sure that it's very clear when you're ordering a book from the Kindle that it's not audio enabled.
That's exact. You hit the nail on the head. They're doing it passive aggressively. Here's my thesis. First of all, within 2 days of the Authors Guild kvetching, Amazon backs down and says, and I know you appreciated this, Denise. What we're doing is completely legal. It is in no, we are not in any way saying that they have any merit in their argument whatsoever. We would win a lawsuit. We're going to be nice guys, and we're going to let each publisher mark their books not for text-to-speech, if they should so choose. Right. Here's my passive-aggressive theory on this. How could they have done it in 2 days? They knew exactly what was going to happen. Jeff Bezos played this like a perfectly played chess match. He said, they're going to bitch. Here's what we do. We go public. We let them bitch. We make sure everybody hears them bitch. Then we say, okay, we'll be the nice guys. We'll back off. And now you're exactly right, Alex. They're going to make it very clear when you buy a book, this may not be read out loud, and nobody's going to buy it.
Yeah, exactly. I would just skip right over it.
Yeah, Ray
would
Beckerman.
You really skip right out? Would you really skip right over it because you couldn't listen to it?
Well, yeah, I don't really like to read.
Denise, they're right though, right? There's no legal merit in the Author Guild's point.
Well,
of view.
I guess that's where I was going a second ago. Is you know, you're into this fuzzy area of fair use. So Will Wheaton's point was, there's really no difference. You're not taking away from the market for audiobooks because people are always going to want that human reader. There's just no comparison. And actually, when I heard his side-by-side thing, I went, you know, I wouldn't mind having Alex, the bot, read me a book.
That's interesting.
And in the one thing that I will say is that we are, this is still, you know, voice text-to-speech is still very early on.
Right.
And that I can see 5 years down the road, 10 years down the road, getting to a point where I may not really care. And if it was a lot less expensive, if I only had to pay the reduced cost of the book and get the audio for free, I can see where the authors are trying to draw a line. But I think that they're gonna lose this one.
But as far as what you were saying a second ago, Leo, I think you're dead on that you know, Amazon may have been pretty crafty in the way they did this. Ray Beckerman, who's the RIAA versus the People lawyer, he represents a lot of the defendants in those cases, had a comment on Slashdot where he said Amazon showed this threat for what it was, extortion.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was, if I were in a cricket audience, I would applaud politely and say, well played. Right. Well played, Amazon. It was pretty clear that Jeff knew exactly how else would he have been able to say within 2 days, okay, we'll turn it off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they obviously had that capability already built into it to do it. I don't know if I haven't seen any. Has anybody seen any books yet that already have the audio turned off? Has anybody spotted that? Who has a Kindle? I've got a review Kindle and the one.
No, I haven't at all. No.
Yeah, yeah. I don't see that. And what if you already have it? If you already have the book on your Kindle, I've got about 4 on the review unit they sent me.
Yeah, I guess there's nothing they could do.
You've got to be grandfathered in.
Yeah, yeah. The one thing about the Kindle that bothers me still is the pricing. I think it's still way too expensive to become a mass market device.
It needs to get down to about
$199 or less in order, to really take off.
And it's U.S. only, which really... now, that's because publishing is such a crazy quilt of... national jurisdictions, and I don't know if they'll ever solve that. We've learned.
Yeah, and Leo, you mentioned earlier that there was some hinting that they were going to do allow you to read it on your iPhone. And in the initial announcement, when they were talking about the capability that the new Kindle has to kind of, if you have two Kindles and you stop reading a book in one place, you pick up the other Kindle.
Right. I love that.
They mention or on other devices.
Right.
And I know that if I don't own a Kindle, and there's an iPhone application that lets me do that, I will get the iPhone application and skip the hardware on the Kindle, unless, you know, version 3 is just dramatically better and dramatically cheaper. I'd read it on my iPhone.
John, would you ever buy a Kindle?
No.
Why not?
I don't buy anything anyway, if you haven't noticed. Now, if I was going to buy it, I think it needs a $99 price point.
It's way, well, I don't know about $99, but I think you're right.
What's wrong with $99?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure that, I don't know. Do you think it costs more than $99? What do you think it costs to make this thing?
Well, probably the way they're making it. Obviously, what are they charging for? $250,
$359.
Then it's probably costing a bag of parts would probably be around $70-$80.
Right, then
maybe
they could charge $99 because they're making money on the books.
No, but they're not going to make any money. They have to get the bag of parts down to $25, but you know, and that means the screen mainly.
All right, so what about $150? I think that would be a sweet spot.
$99. There's your number.
All right.
Well, to iPod price because, Leo, you said a bit ago that you have your iPod for audiobooks. I could see my Kindle replacing what I use my iPod for mostly, which is audiobooks and podcasts.
Right, right.
So yeah, if I could, you know, that's sort of my legacy device I carry around with me right now is my old video iPod. I have my iPhone, but I can't put all that stuff on it because the iPhone memory is too small.
It's only 16 gigs.
And plus it kills the battery on your phone.
You know what? And what's interesting to me about both the Kindle and the iPhone is that there's kind of a tradition in electronics that they will electronics makers will sometimes continue to sell an older version of something at a lower price. Apple didn't do that with the original iPhone. You know, they could have sold that for $150 and made it, you know, the older, cheaper model. And Amazon did not do that with the Kindle. They could have continued to make kind of the bigger, clunkier one and sold that at, say, $200.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm surprised they didn't do that, actually. But, you know, there was a real question whether there's any incentive for them to do a cut price anyway, since they can't seem to make enough to sell anyway.
Well, they also have to pay for the bandwidth because it rides over the cell phone network.
Don't you think they build
that into
the 3G network, too? Don't you think they build that into the price of the book? I would.
Into the hardware.
Okay. Because if I'm Jeff Bezos.
Because the books are cheap.
I would. Yeah, but so here's the. So, John, you're probably better at this than I am, but as I remember, the normal cut that a book publisher takes from the bookstore is 50%.
It's between 40 and 60, depending on the book, typically.
Okay. So that's presumably the same deal they make with Amazon. So if Amazon is charging 50%, they need to charge a little more, obviously, than it's costing them for the book, but the publishers don't have to kill a tree. They don't have to print it. They don't have to ship it. So presumably the publishers are making a deal that is better than 40 to 60%. Amazon's charging, you know, $10 for a bestseller. What is that? That's, you know, $25 bestseller.
What's overlooked in the formula is the fact that the authors are getting screwed in this deal.
Do the authors not make as much for an ebook?
Well, I mean, if the book is selling for $10, which is what everybody wants these things to sell for, I mean, there's even a protest movement right now to boycott any books on the Kindle that are more than $9.99. And if you do a two way, you know, just a 50% split with a retailer, so it's $5 essentially for the retailer and $5 for the publisher, and the typical royalty is 15% of wholesale or 15% of retail is going to be a buck or so. When if they were doing a hardcover book, they'd be making $5 a copy or $3, $4, $5, something like that. So they're losing about two-thirds of their income on these electronic books. I'm sure authors aren't too happy about it. That's probably one of the reasons the Authors Guild kind of made a fuss to just harass them.
Well, but one question I have in the long term is whether authors could possibly be empowered to publish directly. I mean, what do they need a publisher for when they're not having to send a book over to China anymore?
That's a good point. Why not just publish directly? I mean,
especially if you're an established, if you're Stephen King or you're someone like that, why would you, you need it?
You don't. That's the joke of it. In fact, there should be some way of directly just a writer should be able to put together his own book and then sell it directly to the Kindle for $9.95 and take the entire $9.95 minus whatever it costs to run the server and put it in his pocket. And I think that's absolutely where things are going to head. In some way, shape, or form, it's almost like indie music. I mean, kids listen to these weird bands you never heard of. I think it's going to go that way with writers. I mean, I think a lot of them are going to have some trouble getting much traction, but you don't need as much traction if you're taking all the money.
Right.
Amazon's deal with authors, I'm seeing in our chat room, is 35%. So it's even better. And Jeff Bezos was on with Jon Stewart on The Daily Show. Stewart asked this question, said, Jeff, why do you charge so much? Why don't you cut the price? Bezos said, because it costs us that much. We can't charge any less, which might be credible.
You know, Amazon has its own self-publishing arm. It's a company called BookSurge. And I wonder if there's anything being routed directly from BookSurge into the Kindle.
Well, I tell you, if I'm, you know, it's not the Authors Guild that should have been complaining about the Kindle. It's the publishers. It's Pearson. It's Random House. Those are the people who are really threatened by this device. Those are the people who are going to be disintermediated.
And if we go back to looking at what Hearst is doing, an open format from Hearst would once again allow the publishers, theoretically, to be able to sell their stuff online directly to another reader as well,
right,
where they don't have to pipe through Amazon. I think maybe that's what Hearst is seeing as an open opportunity.
Why wouldn't Hearst just jump on the Kindle? Why make your own device?
Well, they are on the Kindle. They are on all the, a lot of the Hearst
all the magazines are? Yeah.
Can I make a comment?
Some of the magazines and the newspapers.
Yes, sir. Mr. Dvorak, make a comment.
I was looking in the chat room, and people are talking about Lulu. Lulu is a complete ripoff.
What? Really? I love Lulu.
They take 15%. They take the author's commission just as overhead. It's ridiculous.
But they're printing it. They're shipping it.
You know, if you went out there and found there's plenty of people that do print on demand, shipping and printing, and they don't take 15% out of the blue. They just charge you what it costs.
Oh, and then you charge a price over and above that to make your profit. So what about Blurb? Is that the same as Lulu?
I haven't looked at their Blurb, deal.
More photo-oriented.
It seems like people like Cory Doctorow are in a great position here.
Oh,
you know,
God,
people
yeah.
who have their own audience. You had him on the show last week. He was talking about how he has, you know, the change log between editions of what he's going to push out to the publisher. You know, Cory could readily just put his work wherever he wanted it.
I read an interesting article. My daughter gets a magazine called Mental Floss, which is actually a pretty cool magazine for kids, you know. And they wrote an article about Paul Coelho, the guy who wrote The Alchemist. And Paul is very hip. Paul is very with it. Turns out, for instance, that the book wasn't selling in Russia. The Russian edition wasn't selling. So he put it for free online. And it's the kind of book, I guess, that gets a lot of people excited about it because it started selling. The print edition started selling. He, like Corey, has done that very counterintuitive thing, which is give it away online. And he's done very, very well. The book sold more than 10 million copies. He's done very well by doing that.
Well, and I think for people in the creative field, I think we're a lot of people, and whether it's
the future,
whether it's video, but I think that there's a really important thing of maintaining your own brand and making sure people know who you are and building your own following, whether it's on your blog or on Twitter or on anything else that you're doing, so that you're portable, so that when you publish something to Amazon or to iTunes or to somewhere else, that people know who you are and they'll actually go buy it because of you. And I think that's the kind of thing that we're seeing from, you know, Cory Doctorow.
Well, that's what we do here. I mean, really, ultimately, what you got to do is build a community that will support you, whether you're Jonathan Colton, Peter Himmelin, who's coming in tonight,
right.
Cory Doctorow. You build a community that loves your work. And you bring it to them.
And
you
again,
bring it straight to them. And you say, hey, you like this? You support this.
And again, Nine Inch Nails is a perfect example.
Nine Inch Nails?
I mean, they sold out. What really made the money was their limited edition. They gave the album away and had a limited edition that they made $750,000 in a week on because they had a strong, intense following of only a handful of people.
Well, you could do that if you're an established brand. But how easy is that to get started with? I don't think we've actually seen yet anybody who's kind of taken off from that as the starting point.
Well, where was Cory Doctorow before? Was he on? He was never on a national brand.
No,
he built it up.
I think you could do it. I really, Jonathan Colton.
Yeah, I agree,
Jonathan Colton.
But over a very long period of time, you know, it's not something.
I think cream rises, no matter.
Yeah, but it might take it. I mean, you have to think about it as like a project.
Yeah,
that
it's
might
not
take
be
you
tomorrow.
What's a long period of time to you?
How long does it take for Metallica?
10 to 15 years.
How long did it take for
15 years?
Not that long.
You should be able to build a brand in 18 months.
John is the king of brand building.
That's not true, but I can tell you it's doable in 18
Everything
months.
I
but
know.
I'd say from scratch without the help of national media,
yeah.
It could take. I mean,
today's
but what
world
I'm saying is people need to prepare for
if
that.
If you knew though. Anything about, you know, yeah, absolutely. With the internet, I don't think it's a problem for 18 months. 18
All you
months
need is Twitter, baby.
We need them to recommend you.
All I know is it took Mike Arrington a lot less time than that.
Yeah, there's a
there
good
you
example.
Go. Perfect example.
Boy, is he a brand.
Yep.
Wow.
I remember sitting and talking
months.
With him at Stanford when he had just started doing TechCrunch, which at the time he was doing as sort of a joint project with Keith Keir for another.
Who? Who's that? Amazing.
Yeah. No, Keith has been around for a long time. And, you know, TechCrunch took on a life of its own, and obviously by that time next year, it was an interesting conversation to look back on.
It was very quick.
Yeah.
It was a year. It was less than a year.
I would agree. It takes you 15 years. If your product is crap, you can still get an audience. But
boy, TechCrunch, because it was really right on, it really covered the stories. It was the place, and word spreads fast among that audience. Now, that's key, is the people who have done well with this, at least so far, have done well with the tech community, because our audience is very wired together. Or in the record industry, where you have an audience that's it's already tightly knit, you know, and people will say, oh, Nine Inch Nails. So you need that. You do need it. You can't be some loosely knit.
Well, the people have to be on a computer. That's the key.
Yeah, that's very key.
For now. I mean, over time, more and more people will be on the computer. But definitely the reason that we picked the shows that we started with was because we knew that those were the...
Start with the tech shows.
Yeah, those were the niches that we wanted to jump
in. And now Adam Carolla is number one on iTunes because it's gone beyond that. It's gone to mainstream media now.
Right.
What's Adam Carolla doing on iTunes?
Adam Carolla lost his job. Remember, he was going to be the guy who saved Howard Stern's, you know, because when Howard Stern went to satellite, he was going to save Infinity. Big flop. Lost his job. Made a podcast. I should be nicer because I'm going to be on the podcast on Wednesday. But he's made a podcast. And the funny thing is, you know, flop in the mainstream media terms does not mean much. When you go to the podcast, look at we only have, you know, hundreds of thousands of people who listen to this show. If you're, you know, Infinity, that's not enough. That's, you know, when Howard Stern had tens of millions.
A broadcast TV show.
But it's fine for me. I'll take it.
I mean, a broadcast TV show that is a flop is 5 million or 5
right.
or 6 million people or less is considered, unmanageable, you know. But if you look at a million people listening to your show and you're getting, let's say, $30 CPM, I mean, it's
exactly.
You know, that's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money.
Hey, does it surprise you guys to know there are only 24 magazines available for the Kindle?
Yeah, it does. And it's very disappointing to me. But I have to say, the New Yorker, which just recently became available in the Kindle, That was a big deal for me.
Because of the cartoons?
Yeah, I like the I only read it for the pictures. And you know, the nudies. It's really big for me. No, I'm a big New Yorker fan, and my problem is we subscribe to the paper edition, but between my wife and daughter, I never get to read it. My daughter will actually, and I can't really stop her because I'm thrilled, we'll take it and go upstairs and we never see it again. And what am I going to say? No, you can't read the New Yorker till I'm done. No, I wanted to read it. That's pretty good for a 16-year-old. Hey, I want to take a little break here and talk a little bit about Audible.com. Audible's our sponsor, and they're not going away. I got to tell you, even if you can get the Kindle can read to you, there's a big difference between a computer voice reading to you and a performance. And that's what Audible books really are. They are performances by some of the best actors in the world. They bring these things to life. Now, you may not know some of the names. Go to audible.com/twit2, sign up for the Platinum account. That's 2 books a month. You'll get a credit towards 2 books. Then look at some of the books. You may see the names of the readers. You may not know them. Believe me, you will come to know them. It's a specialty. Audible's recording studios are located near Broadway. They get some of the best actors, the best, most talented readers, and these guys and gals bring a story to life. I think this week, in honor of our newspaper discussion, our Audible pick is going to be All the President's Men, Carl Bernstein and Bob Woodward. I mean, this is what journalism, to me, there was a whole generation of kids my age who became investigative journalists, became reporters, became news people because of Carl Bernstein and Bob Woodward and All the President's Men. It was inspiring. It's the story of Watergate, how a president was brought down by deep throat and brilliant reporting. And if you've seen the movie or if you've heard the story, it is so dramatic. Let me play a little bit of All the President's Men here for you. This is, by the way, Richard Pope.
They had run into a solid wall of riot-equipped Washington policemen who had pushed them back onto the campus of George Washington University with tear gas and billy clubs. From their balconies, anxious tenants...
Hey, I got to also mention now, the clips...
Some had cheered and toasted when the protesters...
The clips are often in a lower quality. They have a new format now on Audible. I'm really excited about it. The E format, it is full CD quality. Now, I've always thought that the format 4 was good enough, but E is incredible. I'm downloading all my books over again in the E format. So if you're an Audible member, take a look at it. This is also available in the E format. I'm changing.
And it makes a difference?
Oh, sounds beautiful.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I mean, it sounds good anyway. If you've listened right. to Audible books, I never thought it was a problem. I think it's something like 32 kilobit MP3 that right. the Type 4 was. E is now 128 kilobit high quality. Sounds
easier on the ears, I imagine.
Oh, it's beautiful. And it's just wonderful. And they've done a great job of getting these books converted. This book, even though it's an older book, is already available in the E format. If you saw Frost Nixon and you want to know more about that whole story, this is a great one. All the President's Men. Now, here's how you can get it. And as long as you're reading that, you might as well get another book about the same subject, The Secret Man, The Story of Watergate's Deep Throat. Now, many years later, we finally found out who Deep Throat is. Bob Woodward wrote the story. This book came out, I think, 2 years ago, 3 years ago. Who was Deep Throat? Bob Woodward tells the story, and you can hear that. Make two books.
It all turns out to be a disgruntled employee.
It always
That's
is.
What it all came down
it
to.
It always is. Audible.com/twit. Join the Platinum group. Get two books a month. I go through two books a month, and I don't even commute anymore, but I listen in the car when I'm driving carpool. In fact, my wife will say, can you get the kids? I'll say, yeah. yeah. And she'll say, how come it took you an hour? Well, I was listening. I got involved. I couldn't get out of the car. When I'm at the gym working out, when I am walking the dog, when I'm gardening, when I'm doing housework, it's great for housework. I hate housework. But listening to Audible, you know, suddenly the house is clean and you don't even know how it happened. Audible.com/twit2. Try it today. You're going to love it. And we thank them so much for the support of This Week in Tech. You know, Audible's owned by Amazon. So you got to figure Amazon's not going to, it can't be thinking that the Kindle reading is going to cannibalize the business they just bought.
Right. Well, they win no matter what.
Well, that's true. That's true. I know it's one of their goals. Bezos' goal is to get every book on the Kindle, but I think it's also his goal to get as many books as possible, if not all books, in Audible format, which I'm behind 100%. Everybody okay? Anybody want to take a break? Shall we move on to our next story? Dwight, how
Let's
you
do
doing?
It.
You all
I'm
right?
I'm doing fine.
He's plugging
I'm doing
in.
Good.
He's going to charge up his iPhone.
I'm charging my Kindle. Actually, I just got the note that said you were running low.
What is it? You know, my battery life has been a little disappointing.
It's been about this, like the first one.
Yeah, maybe. They said it was going to be 25% better. I don't find it to be at all.
Well, was the first one connected to an edge network or a 3G?
That's what I've been asking that. It was my understanding that it was GPRS the first time around, and it's edge now, but I've been told, or EVDO now, but I've been told by everybody it was EVDO, so I don't know. I don't know.
Well, it's lasted. I charged it the day after I got it. I had it fully charged up on Wednesday, and I just now got the message to charge it.
Maybe
so.
Maybe there's something wrong with my battery. I've charged it three times since Wednesday. I don't know. And I'm not doing a lot of text to speech.
How much are you reading?
A lot. I have to say, I'm transformed by this. Denise, you're going to like it.
Good. I'm thinking of getting one for my dad too. And I'm liking the fact that I went and checked the, network availability, and it seems to be really, really good. He lives in a very rural place, way up north. He lives in Mendocino.
Yeah, Sprint's pretty good up in Mendocino.
Yeah. So
it's Sprint. It's Sprint PCS. So
okay. They said it's got coverage there. Didn't they have big fulfillment problems with the first one, or was that just a big publicity stunt that all of the first ones sold out immediately, and then you had to wait?
Yeah. No. Well, that's the question. Is it the Nintendo marketing technique, or is it that they can't make them fast enough, or what?
They have never said how many they've sold.
They won't say. But there were shortages, whether they were artificial or
all six of them.
Yeah, exactly. We're sold out. We can't keep them in stock.
Well, one analyst estimated that they sold about 500,000.
But how did he get that? How did he?
Right, right. I mean, we don't know where those numbers come from. But I think probably that they
seems high.
Does it?
It seems high, and I think that they probably had a they probably wound up under. Underproducing with the desire to make it look more right. desirable.
Wouldn't put it past Jeff. I'm going to stand on what I've said, but I really believe that this is the breakthrough that the iPod was.
Well, do we think that Apple, if they build the tablet,
mark it, John. I called the patient dead. Print books dead on March 2nd, 2009.
I still think that Apple will build an iPhone that's about the same size as that.
Wouldn't that be a great product?
This almost looks like it. It'll be in color and play video, and we'll give it a real run for its money.
The iPhone.
It's March 1st, by the way.
Well, the show comes out March 2nd.
Wow.
And I think Apple will do it by July.
Really?
While we're giving
By this July?
By this July.
I would abandon this in a heartbeat if they
You know, I'm looking at that thing on the screen there, Leo.
Yeah.
And the contrast sucks.
Yeah, it's
just
the same,
like a gray thing.
It's the same as before. You know, it's not a breakthrough.
It's for reading text.
It's, you know, it's readable enough. And if you have a bright, if you have a good light on it, it's
black ink on white paper is better.
You know what I love? That's something you can't do with black ink on white paper. You can change the font size.
Gray ink on gray paper.
It's gray. It's gray. But you can change. For somebody who's old like me, not as old as you, John, but somebody's old. The fact that I can get this to basically a large text format is fantastic.
I just need more pretty.
You wouldn't
pictures.
Need to do that if it was had a good contrast.
Well, that's true. I do. I do. It is a little harder to read
because I can read off the a little E71 Nokia, which has got like 2-point type. I don't have any trouble reading it because it's got extremely high contrast.
Yeah,
Leo, have you had a problem accidentally buying books with it?
Not yet, but they do.
Like sitting on it.
Yeah, right.
Twice I bought. What happened is, at least on mine. When I press a button, the button for to click an item on the screen, there's a delay. And the first time I tried to get past the menu, I hit the button, and I hit it again. The second click triggered the buy button on the next page, and I bought a book I wasn't intending to buy.
Yikes. But now they do – I think this must be common because they do say immediately, you can take it back.
Yes, and I did. But what they end up doing is they charge you, and then they issue a credit.
That's not so good.
So, and I've done that twice now with this.
The biggest improvement to me is it's just harder to turn the page than it was before. It was so easy to accidentally lose your place.
Right. And yeah, that's a big deal.
They've added a few little things that on the surface don't seem to make a difference, but I think do. For instance, when you lose your place, it was very hard to get back to your place before. You'd have to kind of jump around. Now they have go to last page read. Just something like that makes a huge difference in usability. So I'm very happy with it, and I have now read. I've probably read 20 hours on it, and I've really enjoyed it.
And it's comfortable.
It's very comfortable.
I don't know how you can do this, Leo, because you're on the air 24 hours a day.
I was laughing when he said he does housework. I don't know when he does.
Yeah, you were laughing. You ought to hear my wife. I can hear her from here. Housework. What is he talking about, housework? Speaking of a new iPhone, CBS. I think CBS is really showing that they actually have a little bit of an inkling of what this whole thing is about. Now is putting Star Trek episodes on iPhones, along with CSI and other full episodes of TV. You know,
I'd say full with an asterisk.
Oh, yeah, what's the asterisk?
This is the new iPhone app?
Yeah.
So I installed it.
Yeah.
And so the new, it's TV.com. So if you search for CBS or TV.com on the app store or whatever, you can download it. And it'll play on 3G or Wi-Fi. So it'll play a beat up one. I will say that having an application that does this is a completely different thing than having, a web page, which is what NBC did. Much better. I mean, it's just the experience of actually going through them is great.
Versus Hulu.
The only thing that's a little frustrating is it's full episode, and then you get here, and there's six little videos. So you have to click one, and then you'll play, and
it's a chunk at a time.
But there's these little videos that you have to chunk through, and
Clearly, you're not a Star Trek fan.
Well, yeah.
You wouldn't mind so much.
I love Star Trek,
What's that?
Yeah, I want Tribbles on my iPhone, no doubt.
is that you're showing the application right now?
Yeah. And the other thing is there's not that many full episodes on here. You cruise through it, and there's a lot of snippets and only a few full episodes.
Well, Hulu was like that when it first started, right?
Yeah. Yeah, hopefully.
As a start, I have to say the experience is actually pretty good.
It is.
But if you're on Edge, you're out of luck.
No, it works on Edge.
Well, 3G.
Or 3G, I see.
I don't think it'll work on
Edge. 3G and Wi-Fi.
How does it play on 3G? Pretty well?
It plays okay. I mean, it plays on what you'd expect with a 3G connection compared to a Wi-Fi connection. I haven't been able to test the Wi-Fi yet.
And this is free.
It is free.
How many spots? Is it like Hulu where it's just kind of a lower number of commercials?
Or? You know, I just saw it today and installed it today, so I haven't hit the spots yet. I just wanted to see if it would work.
Have more,
I haven't seen any commercials in it.
More or less than we have.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the cutoff.
I think less.
Would you pay Comcast $10 a month for online TV? An article in the New TV says that Comcast, probably kicking and screaming, but Comcast is going to start doing online video as well.
They have to do this.
I guess they do. Now, the question is, will they charge extra? How are they going to do it? Are they going to maybe say, all right, you're an HBO subscriber, so we'll let you watch HBO online?
Well, no, it sounds like that what they're talking about is original content, which could be really good for you or somebody.
Well, they do this on The Fan.
So the idea is that it's not necessarily what they're saying right now, at least to begin with, is they're not
It won't be The Sopranos.
No, they don't want to do that. So it's going to be original content, new content that they're going to be adding to it, which is great for smaller developers, I think.
People like you,
yeah.
More than me, yeah. Netflix is also saying we might spin off our streaming business as a separate business, so you could be a Netflix DVD subscriber or a Netflix streaming subscriber.
I think I just become a streaming subscriber.
Yeah, me too.
Although the only thing I like about Netflix now is being able to rent Blu-rays, because I don't really want to commit to another piece of plastic anymore. I don't want to buy plastic anymore, but I do like my Blu-rays. Until
they're charging more for the Blu-rays, right?
A buck more a month.
Yeah, I have.
Which is not too bad, but it's just insulting.
Why? Like,
don't you get enough from me? Why are you charging a buck extra?
They get a lot from me.
What, you think that's okay, John, that they should...
Well, at the moment, yeah, I think just for a while, it's a way of, let's face it, the business is going to die and they got to do what they have to do to stay in business. And yeah, it's a good service. Right. I don't think it's a bad thing. And man, Blu-ray is really nice to watch.
It is. It's a huge improvement.
I think this Comcast thing is pretty clueless. I'm not going to be paying my cable company any more than I already do.
Well, what if they did it for free? Would you? Well, I mean, they do if you're already...
If they did it for free, I mean, I think they're missing a good opportunity here. They could kind of do what TiVo does, which is try and aggregate some good web content and point people to it, since they have a bunch of people who are using their service already.
Yeah.
And, if Comcast could sort of build their brand by doing that, more power to them.
But I think if they had quality programming within certain niches, I think that it would be an opportunity. Because, I mean, I know that I know people who buy the extra package so that they can watch their home football team, or they can watch Showtime, or they can watch. Now, the thing is that niche content has to be really good. But if they added things that are if they queued off of what was already happening in the podcasting world and took some of those top ones, gave them a little bit more money, and got something good, I could definitely see people saying, "Oh, I'll pay $10 because I really want to watch people breaking, rebuilding cars." Or
$10 is a lot though for this kind of thing.
That is a lot of money. On top of,
$120 a year for a subscription to look at like low end, probably semi amateurish crap.
Well, I agree. If that's what it is, I think that wouldn't work. But I think that if them charging for it also creates a revenue stream to start giving people who maybe have gotten really good at doing stuff for $500 a show, giving them $5,000 a show, and having them increase the production value.
I don't think anybody's going to pay for anything I do. I think this is advertising based for myself.
Leo, I tagged something for Twit you should take a look at, and it actually goes to our journalism discussion from earlier, too. There was a good episode of On the Media, NPR's On the Media.
I love that show, by the way.
Yeah,
That's a great show.
Where they were looking at the demise of the newspaper industry, and they highlighted this company called Kachingle. Great name.
Kachingle, I guess. Yeah.
Kachingle.
You want to say it.
It's an interesting model. It's you decide how much money each month you want spread over the things that you're consuming, and then
that's a good idea, because the thing that's driving people crazy is this penny ante, onesie twosie. I got 23 bills.
Right. But the problem with Kachingle is what they're hoping people will do is put the little Kachingle badge on their site. And then as you're reading, you decide if you want that logged as something you're enjoying. And so you click the badge. And then Kachingle aggregates all your clicks and says, okay, you've spent more time on the New York Times and some time over here on Twit, and we'll take your money that you're giving for this content, and we'll spread it out according to where your attention has gone.
Very interesting.
Yeah. I think there could be a more effective way of tracking you rather than making you click something.
Are you a regular on that show? Because I see you've been on it a number of times.
No, I've only been on it once.
Oh, okay.
But no, that's cool. I listen to it all the time.
Yeah. I missed your episode. What were you talking about?
I was talking about a ShieldLaw case in California. Do you remember the Apple v. Doe's case from 2006 where I think it was the Think Secret people.
Oh, yes.
Were saying that they didn't want to have to disclose to Apple. You remember it was about the...
they had some rumor that they had, but they didn't want to say where they got it.
Yeah, it was about the, what are the little spaceship things, their routers?
The airports?
Airports. they had some, they'd broken some pre-release information about
one of them. They had a
real
picture of it, yeah.
Yeah. And so there was a big lawsuit, and Apple wanted to get at their sources. And the California court said, it went into this whole question of, you know, what's journalism, and are we going to distinguish between online journalists and any other kind of journalists. And in California, under our Shield law, the court interpreted that as being, no, journalism is journalism. It doesn't matter who you are doing it, and we're going to protect your sources.
Now, I agree with that.
Wasn't there a federal decision recently about that? Or no, maybe it's a...
There are two different bills pending right now in Congress.
Bills, that's right.
To amend the federal Shield law.
And the House version does not really protect bloggers.
Mm-hmm.
But the Senate version says, well, anybody who's essentially in the business of journalism, which might leave a little hole for bloggers, I guess.
Yeah, no, absolutely. The Senate version is much more inclusive in the way that the California court was back in that case. The House version wants to put some sort of bar of how much money you actually have to be making from your acts of journalism, which... as we were talking about the Kindle.
You have to make money.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Well, I think that all of this is going to end up in the Supreme Court no matter what. No matter how they craft this law, the first time that they collar someone who's got, you know, if EFF, you know, jumps in, there's going to be a great opportunity to take this to the Supreme Court and nullify anything that's there anyway.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, even if your hobby is journalism, you should get a little credit.
Right.
So the Shield law is what protects you from revealing your sources.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So right now, as it stands, if you're a blogger outside of the state of California and you have a scoop, can the... But wait a minute.
The laws vary from state to
it's
state,
different
and
each
I'm
state.
By no
okay.
means familiar with...
But I mean, it seems like real journalists go to jail all the time for not revealing their sources. Doesn't that happen from time to time?
It depends on the state and what is protected.
I distinctly remember an episode of The West Wing. No, but I mean, that seems...
So there was a reporter in New York. It was around the Plame case, right?
Yeah.
Spent
some time until he revealed his source. And
well,
they worked
she did.
Some,
I
she
think.
Did, right?
Yeah.
And then worked it out. So that's state by state. Denise, that's not federal law.
Right. There is a federal Shield law. But yes, each of the states have their own take on that through their own state.
I guess I should probably find out.
Not to completely change the subject, but while we're talking about legality, there's a story on your list here that we really have to get to now that we have an expert on the...
Finally, we got somebody who knows what she's talking about.
Apple says iPhone jailbreaking is illegal.
Yeah, you know, this is an older story, but I would like to get your take on this, Denise, in just a moment. But before we do, in fact, we have a couple
Ooh,
other
nice
stories.
Tease.
Yeah, you like that, huh? We have a couple other stories, including Apple's a VP at Apple saying, no, Steve's coming back. He's coming back. And some more interesting stories, including Gmail going down. And a competition in the online app store fart space. Apparently.
Turned into quite a brouhaha.
Yes. It's quite... Quite a kerfuffle, if you will. But before we... Why should that get a laugh? I am not a
it
teenager.
It didn't, Leo. It didn't.
Okay, thank you. I'm the only one. Before we go on to that, I do want to mention my friends at Citrix who do GoToMeeting. That's what we use all the time for online meetings, and I highly recommend it. If you are in a situation where you're stuck on a conference call, poor Denise sitting here with the phone glued to her head, you're talking to somebody on the phone. You know he's playing Tetris. She's checking her email on her BlackBerry. They're not paying any attention to what you're doing. That's because what you're doing is not so very compelling. That's why you need GoToMeeting. GoToMeeting takes a boring conference call where you're not grabbing people and makes it engaging and interesting through the use of visuals, ladies and gentlemen. Simply put, when you're going to have an a conference call, you could do it ahead of time through an email. It's very simple, a couple of clicks of the email. Or you can do it when you're on the phone with somebody. You say, look, I got to show you this. Go to GoToMeeting.com. Here's the meeting ID. They don't have to install any software. They don't have to jump through any hoops. And by the way, if you're trying to sell somebody on something, you don't want to make them work. This is very easy. They go to GoToMeeting.com. Suddenly, they're seeing your computer on their screen. By the way, Mac or Windows. They see the computer. They see the PowerPoint or the keynote. They'll see your drawings. You can collaborate together on a document. That's kind of how I use it, is working together with other people, because we have a far-flung group of people that we work with. You can also use it for training. If you have an application and they don't, you can show them how to use it. This thing is amazing. You know, Dick DiBartolo, the GizWiz, used it with Ludwig. They were working together on a site. Ludwig's in Poland. Dick's in New York City. They used GoToMeeting, and they were able to see what was going on. It's very affordable. One low, flat monthly rate. You meet as often as you want. You don't have to count the meetings or count the minutes. And now you could try it free for 30 days, which I would recommend. This is a great thing to show your boss or your clients, to try it, to see what it can do for you. It's very addictive. I got to warn you. GoToMeeting.com/twit. GoToMeeting.com/TWIT. Spend 30 days with GoToMeeting. You'll see what I'm talking about. Citrix is a great company. They've done this right. And GoToMeeting is the best product on the market. I've tried all of the others. This is the one. God, we had a meeting the other day with our payroll. I'm not going to name names with our payroll company. They were using some other company's solution. I wanted to like shake them and say, please, just use, this is horrible. This is painful. I couldn't do it on a Mac. I had to go over to a PC. I had to download and install software. I had two ActiveX controls I had to click. I mean, the thing was, I'm going, this is a nightmare. You can't make a client do this. That's why GoToMeeting. It's just simple. Just do it. GoToMeeting.com/twit. We thank them so much for their support. So, John, you're saying that what? Hello? Oh, John went off to baste his turkey. he posed the question, and Denise is here, thank goodness, to answer this question.
So the basis for contending that there's something illegal about jailbreaking your iPhone is the DMCA, the Digital Millennium Copyright Act.
Right.
And what the Copyright Office can do is give exemptions from violating that act.
So they can say, well, in the letter of the law, this would be wrong, but we say it's okay.
Right. And so you see Apple coming down on one side of this exemption alternative, saying, no, we don't need an exemption for this. It should be against the DMCA to jailbreak your iPhone.
And so they're not asking for exemption. They're saying on the face of this,
yes,
the law says it's illegal.
Right.
When are we going to get rid of this idiotic DMCA?
Oh, please. Is there any chance?
No, not now. If you look at who's getting appointed and what's going on right now, I don't see that happening anytime soon.
Right. So on the other side, you have EFF, who is...
They ask for an exemption.
Right.
And what is the current status of that?
It's in process. I'm not sure exactly when it all gets worked out, but it will happen this year.
Yeah.
But traditionally, unlocking a phone is not illegal, which is kind of what jailbreaking is, correct? I mean, why is this exemption worthy?
Yeah, didn't the FCC
say it's...
Well,
they're forcing the unlock, though. They're not... the FCC can have, I mean, if it's by rule, but if someone's actually changing the code to unlock it,
but
it is a
they're not unlocking it. That's the irony of it. They're not using it with a different carrier. They're just saying, all you're saying when you jailbreak is, I would like to get apps from somebody besides Apple.
But it's circumventing the DRM, which is, on the face of it, illegal.
No, you're right.
I think it's a bad idea. I think that's the
issue. Is that it, Denise?
That's it. That's why they need an exception.
It's circumvention.
Right.
This stupid law. Just appalling. All right, well, we're all in agreement on that. There is a battle in the application store between a program called Pull My Finger and iFart, but I really don't want to descend to that.
Well, the big question is whether you can trademark Pull My Finger.
You can't trademark Pull My Finger.
It's only existed. I think there's previous art for the last 50 years.
I'm going to ask my attorney, Denise Howell. Denise, I would like to trademark Pull My Finger. Could I?
I would tell you that that would be a very weak trademark.
And why would you want it anyway?
Beer.com has the trademark on it originally, actually.
There was that big fight over the iBeer application, and like Heineken or somebody made an application, and they said, you're giving away the application that we're charging for. It's funny. There must be money in the iPhone store. People wouldn't be fighting so bitterly.
Oh, there's a lot
stuff.
Of money in the iPhone store.
And yet there's we're finding that you cannot charge more than $2 or $3 for an app.
Well, and I think that's it's the old line, we'll make it up on volume.
Yeah.
Because that's what's happening is that, you know, there was the case with David Pogue's book. They released, which this is brilliant, putting his iPhone, The Missing Manual, on the iPhone as an app. And they initially released it at $4.99 kind of as a grand opening sale. Then they moved it up to $9.99 and sales dropped by 75%. This was in Saul Hansel's Bits blog this week.
Yeah, I saw that, yeah.
And what they wound up doing was bringing it back down to $4.99. They kind of found where people would actually buy it. And I just think that I think people are making a lot of money. They're just making it in you know, $2.99, $3.99, $1.99 apps.
It's interesting because Steam, which is Valve's online gaming service, found that they would sell huge, we talked about this last week, huge numbers of applications when they cut the price 50%. Is it because of today's tough economic times, or this is just always true that maybe people are just overcharging for software?
There's a rule in direct marketing that's kind of interesting, and I don't think it applies to all pricing. But the rule is, and it's a very solid one, and people don't, you know, direct marketing experts, in fact, one of the guys the guy who heads up direct marketing over at Intuit actually showed me some documentation for this. Whatever you charge for a product in a direct marketing environment, the net sales will be exactly the same. So if you charge $10, you'll sell half as many as you charge for $5. And if you charge $2.50, you'll sell another twice as many.
Well, that's just macroeconomics. That's the old supply-demand curve.
And with direct marketing, the argument is you want to go at the lowest price that gets you the maximum number of people because, in fact, the real money is in the mailing list.
Oh, that's interesting.
Well, I know we had with some of our software, we literally doubled the price and we doubled the sales.
Wait a minute. You charged twice as much and you sold twice as much?
And it doubled the sales.
Okay.
That
happens
a lot. In fact, that happens with wineries. In fact, a group. I did some work with Robert Craig Winery up in Napa Valley, and they used to sell their wines for $35 and $40. When they went to $75 a bottle, the sales skyrocketed, which just tells you how dumb wine buyers are. That's
well, but I think
it's
that
the same wine.
This happens in a lot of industries because it's a perceived value, but I think that does not exist in the iPhone area because people expect it to be 99 cents, so it has to be really good if it's over.
Yeah, see, that's the difference. I buy wine by the price, but I buy iPhone applications by the pretty picture.
I have some bonehead who's on my Skype just sent me a note saying this works with hookers, too.
Okay, thank you. None of us will admit any expertise in that particular area. Moving along, Dell is in deep trouble. Fourth quarter sales dropped 16%. They now want to trim costs by $1 billion. If you thought support from Dell was going downhill before, imagine. How do you cut costs for $1 billion when your margins are razor thin to begin with?
Well, I think that one of the ways that they're doing that in that article, they're talking about the fact that it is they're outsourcing more. You know, they're going to send more of their manufacturing out. They've closed the North Austin, Texas plant.
Yeah.
But I think that, you know, one of the things that we're going to see in this recession is that a lot of manufacturing is going to be gone
overseas
by the end of this, because now there's much pressure on them.
In a way, this is the post-industrial era, right? Where everybody has said for years we're moving from an industrial economy to a service economy, and the bad economic news is just forcing this to happen more rapidly.
Much faster. Yeah.
Dell employs, I was surprised, 78,900 people.
It's a lot of people.
What were they doing?
what the hell are they making? They say they're going to save the bulk of the billion will come from reducing the cost of designing, sourcing, and building.
See, I just didn't know they spent that much money on design.
Boy, you wouldn't know it to look at it.
This stuff all is designed in China.
It looks crappy. I don't know. Well, now they have red and blue.
You realize how rare that is when you look at, you know, it's just a handful of guys at Apple that design everything.
Johnny Ive.
Yeah, and
know?
It's
just hire Johnny Ive.
Is more than, they have a whole division there. It's one of the leading industrial design firms in the world.
They used to outsource to places like Frog Design and IDEO.
Oh, that's years
it,
ago.
They pulled it all in-house now. Yeah.
But I mean, as far as the decision makers at Apple, I think there's still a handful of guys that make it.
There's one.
One, right, exactly. Well, and he's on vacation.
Well, and that was interesting.
Still working, I understand.
You know, the Apple meeting, the Apple investor meeting, one investor, in fact, only one, pressed the directors on Jobs' health. And said, when is Jobs going to come back? And director Arthur Levinson said, nothing's changed since Jobs announced January 14th he was going to leave. We expect to have him back in June. By the end of June. I don't know what to say about that. I guess that's good news.
That's the news.
We'll see.
We'll see. I mean,
it either happened or it won't.
Is there, Denise, does a director have any responsibility to the shareholders to tell the truth?
Yeah, they have fiduciary duties to their shareholders.
So they can't just make something up.
Yeah.
Here was a little bit of a scary story. It's almost comedic in its extent. The Marine One, which is the president's helicopter, was compromised by a contractor who had a peer-to-peer file sharing program on his computer.
And it saw the whole hard drive.
Apparently...
This brings up a topic I wrote about 8 years ago, and I've revisited it a couple of times, and I bring it up, and people always think I'm joking. People who use computers, just like people who drive cars, should be licensed.
If you're a defense contractor going on Marine One, I agree with you. I agree with you. If you have on your computer the plans, the communications information,
the schematics,
the avionics, the network information, and you've put LimeWire on your system.
Here's my thing: is that why are you connected to the internet? If you have that information, why are you connected? Why is that computer connected to the internet?
And then this guy's so stupid that not only does it put LimeWire on there, but he overrides the standard settings, which, by the way, do not make the whole thing visible, and says, you can have anything you want, whatever you want. It's all there.
I do want to point out that that the people who figured this out, that it happened, was a company outside of Pittsburgh. You know, I'm from Pittsburgh, okay. So I have to
Cranberry Township.
I've been to Cranberry many times, so it's a beautiful, beautiful place.
Boy.
Yeah. And this happens all the time in businesses. Businesses are constantly finding programs like LimeWire and BearShare on their computers, and it's a real problem with industrial espionage.
Jeez Louise. Well, I guess the guy will lose his job, but I mean, it's kind of a little too late.
And this was a defense contractor. This is somebody who, in theory, has to adhere to security standards that are required in order for them to be contractors with the Department of Defense.
I mean, and the other thing to realize is that this is the new helicopters, I believe. I don't think it's the old ones. I think it's the new design that are teetering on the brink of them not making them. You know, because of the economy, because of what we, you know, the question is, should we spend them? They're the most expensive. These helicopters cost as much as an F-22.
Whoa!
Yeah, they're incredibly expensive helicopters, and there's been a big question about whether they're going to move forward, and this undermines that. You got to imagine that the companies building it that were contracting with that defense contractor are going to be insanely upset because now they're like, well, why should we build them? Because Iran has the schematics.
Yeah.
That was who got it. It went to Iranian
Iran?
IP address.
Yeah,
that's the Iranian issue. IP address.
Oh, that's even worse.
Right. It's like the rebels getting a hold of the Death Star.
Your worst nightmare. The rebels getting a hold of the Death Star, says Alex Lindsay, Lucas fan.
No Bothans died in this. It was simply a peer-to-peer. See, if the rebels had only had peer-to-peer, they would not have had any Bothans die to get a hold of the Death Star.
Is that an Apple product?
Boffins?
Boffin?
No, you know, Iran.
Iran.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So it's true, though, that if you had written this as a plot line in Star Wars, it would have been thrown out as too far-fetched.
Corny.
Corny. Oh, well, somebody put a peer-to-peer.
Turned out some stormtroopers had a peer-to-peer on the Death Star, and we were able to download the entire thing.
Stormtroopers aren't so goofy as all that. Denise Howell is online at imetdenise.com. You should also listen to This Week in Law, her wonderful podcast all about tech law and IP. That's on this network. Read her blog and blog.
Logarithms at ZDNet, and I'm D Howell on Twitter.
Oh, let's follow everybody. Follow Denise. I follow you.
Thank you.
Yes. D Howell with two L's.
You follow her on Twitter?
Oh, Twitter. No, yes.
He just follows her around.
I follow her on Twitter. All right, Denise, thank you for being here. We really appreciate you taking the time from your vacation.
Thank you so much. Always a pleasure. This is a vacation for me, Leo, coming on Twitch.
Yeah, and you don't have to take care of your son. Your husband has him out on the golf course.
That's right.
Teaching him nature's greatest game.
Yes.
Dwight Silverman, we really appreciate your time from the old school.
Well, I appreciate you having me.
He's the old school. A newspaper man.
Not yet. Let's not call it that yet.
An ink-stained wretch.
I'm a blogger, too. So.
I know. Blogs.cron.com/techblog. And I read it every day. In fact, I steal your links.
All right.
It's a great blog. You keep up on everything.
And my Twitter handle is D Silverman.
D Silverman. Like D Howell.
Right.
Excellent. Somebody sent me an email, John C. Dvorak, saying, hey, did Dvorak get knocked off of Twitter? There's no The Real Dvorak, D-A-V-O-R-A-K. I said, dude, you got to spell it right. Then you'll find him. He is The Real Dvorak, D-V-O-R-A-K.
Yeah, and I only need 50 more to get to 45,000, which, of course, is half of yours, but it's beside the point.
Oh, me? I'm nothing. I'm number 38 on the Twitter list.
Thing's gotten out of control thanks to your Britney Spears.
It's not, you know, and this is a long conversation that I don't really want to get into, but
we're not going to do it. Stop.
It's the Twitter suggested list. And you're seeing people now getting 10,000 new followers a day because they're on that suggested list.
Oh,
and those of us not on the list.
How do we get on the list?
I don't know. Nobody knows how to get on the list.
Yes, I saw you in our local ink stained newspaper on that point, Leo.
Yes.
The LA Times.
Not that I'm bitter. You know, the Times was bitter because the New York Times has two listings on the suggested list and has gone whoosh. And Twitter hasn't mentioned the LA Times. And the rest of us are just stuck growing at the normal few hundred a day or whatever. And these other guys are getting 5,000-10,000 a day. It's totally stupid.
No, you're upset about this.
No, I'm not. And it underscores actually the real silliness of these numbers. Finally, in a way, I'm glad because it finally kind of diffuses the whole topic.
I mean, yeah.
If Twitter were smart, they would rotate that list frequently.
That's what they should do.
Yeah.
They're never going to put me on it because I'm too outspoken a critic. So that's fine. I don't care.
So anyway, you can find me at channeldvorak.com and The Real Dvorak on Twitter.
That's the place. Alex Lindsay is at thepixelcore.com as well as thepixelcore.tv. And he is Alex Lindsay with an A on Twitter.
Yes.
Am I right?
That's correct.
I am correct.
S-A-Y.
S-A-Y.
I get emails going, I can't find you on Twitter, and then it's always S-E-Y.
Wasn't John Lindsay, the late mayor of New York City, L-E-Y?
S-A-Y. I believe he was A-Y. I think he was
A-Y. Was he A-Y as well?
There's not very many of us.
It's unusual.
Yeah, it's E-Y is much more common.
It's the common spelling.
You have it on your Chiron, Leo, as Lindsay.
Oh, you're right.
Lindsay.
Oh, my goodness. The whole day.
I'm horrified.
I've had it misspelled, and I'm
not going to cry.
It's L-I-N-D-S-A-Y.
There you go.
Lindsay. Lindsay. What does that mean in Greek?
It's not Greek. No. It's Scottish. It mostly means that the informal meaning is we caused lots of wars in Scotland and then they kicked us out.
I won't wear a kilt.
Yeah.
Unless I've got a sporting. I'm Leo Laporte. We thank you so much for joining us. Remember, you can listen to this show each and every week, automatically downloaded to your device of choice. If you're using an iPod, use iTunes. We're in the Apple Store, the iTunes Store in the podcast section, as are all the Twit podcasts. But we're also in the Zune Store and other stores, whatever they might be. We're all there. Anything else I should mention? Colleen, anybody? Dane.
I can tell all you New World journalists when you might get thrown in contempt of court under the narrow federal shield law, which I looked up after we talked
about. Am I okay?
Under the broader state laws, you're usually immune from contempt, but under the federal law, it can be pierced, and they, if they can show that the confidential information is necessary and not obtainable through other sources. So if you clam up even in the face of that showing, that's when you're going to jail.
And that's what happens from time to time. Yeah. In the Valerie Plame case, for instance.
Exactly.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you, Denise. I'll make sure not to clam up in future. Another twit.
This is amazing.
Is in the can.
Round the horn.